Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show. In 2016, it was Wall Street versus Main Street. That was one way to think about it. And in Bolshevik Bernie parlance, as you see, as Marxists do, see everything through a class prism. It's the lower and middle classes against the oligarchs, the billionaires, the plutocrats, the upper classes. What about if there's a bit of a struggle within the middle or the upper middle? And again, I don't like to speak in the lexicon of class because America is an exceedingly mobile society and we should always jealously guard that. But what if there is a fight among the middle that is not properly contemplated by the political class, at least in terms of the way they address the electorate? Our friend Joel Kotkin over at Quillette, he writes for a number of outlets, this one in Quillette.com, writes of the two middle classes, an important piece that frames how we may analyze the 2020 election. Joel Kotkin is an internationally recognized authority on global economic, political, and social trends. He's a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University and author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. Joel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So the yeomanry versus the clerisy. It sounds positively Game of Thrones. Explain the distinction between the two.
Well, it is medieval, so maybe there's some resonance there as well. I mean, basically, people talk about the middle class as being sort of one group, but, you know, and the people that I've, you know, if you go down through history, you read people, you know, Marx, Weber, de Tocqueville, they always understood, or even Edmund Burke, you know, that there were different parts of the middle class, that it wasn't just one group of people. And today, we really have two different middle classes. And, you know, we see it very clearly. I live in California, which is always sort of the, you know, petri dish on steroids. But we see that here in California. There are areas that are very middle class and even upper middle class. Let's say here in where I live in Orange County, around Irvine, they vote very liberal. They'll elect a Elizabeth Warren clone as a congressperson. There are other places that are middle class where people work in construction. They own small businesses. They're artisans. These people tend to be much more conservative. And it really is about your relationship to the state. If you are in a profession where government intervention is actually good for business, you're going to tend to favor government intervention. And you'll justify it as people always justify whatever they think. On the other hand, if you're, let's say, running a little business on Main Street and you are concerned that your profits are being taxed, you're going to have to use, you know, certain pronouns or whatever sort of insanity comes out of Sacramento, you feel oppressed by it. So it's a real difference. And you know, in the long run, of course, the failure of the private sector, the free market part of the economy, will eventually affect the people at the clerisy. But, you know, fundamentally, the average, you know, University of California administrator who's going to retire with a $200,000 a year pension fundamentally doesn't care if the government gets bigger. It doesn't it doesn't hurt them at all as long as they get their pension checks. The guy who's got the woman who's got the little restaurant on Main Street, that person is much more vulnerable. So what we're seeing is, for instance, President Trump, for all his, you know, sort of negative characteristics, is very popular among this first group, the yeomanry, the small business owner. They feel that he will sort of keep the government off his neck somewhat, off their neck somewhat. On the other hand, Trump is extraordinarily unpopular in those areas that are dominated by very highly educated professionals, most of whom are not operating in the market system and are not as exposed to regulation as the average small business.
And so what happens, I mean, you know, some providing some historical context here, Michael Lind, who writes a lot about these sort of divide, and he focuses on sort of the college educated versus the not college educated. But this is similar. Basically, you have a small cadre of folks in the clerisy, as you describe it, and a much larger group in the yeomanry and below, frankly. And, you know, what happens when a revolt like occurred in 2016 is repressed, if that were to occur, when people believe that things are getting better and could get better still, and that's put down by sort of the small group of people who occupy those positions of civic authority in the clerisy? It seems to me that's a real tinderbox for a free society.
I agree entirely. I mean, I think that what we're going to be seeing in this country, I fear the 2020 election on both sides. I can see for sure if Trump is reelected that, you know, the university students and, you know, and the clerisy will go completely insane. There'll be demonstrations everywhere. Look, there were demonstrations last time when Trump was elected. On the other hand, you may have a different kind of response among the people who are, you know, now, let's say, the small business owner who says, oh, my God, now Joe Biden's going to come in and he's going to ban this and he's going to add this. Because, you know, the bottom line is that I think people have a good reason to fear that Biden will just be pushed by his, you know, more left of center, more interventionist people, and that there will be a, you know, one of the problems we have in this country, frankly, is that we now seem to have a, you know, we really elect dictators. You know, Bush became somewhat of a dictator. Certainly, Obama tried to act like a dictator, and Trump tries to act as a dictator. And whoever wins in 2020 will try to act like a dictator. And that means that the stakes for the individual parts of the middle class are much greater. If you're operating in a town in Texas and the government's going to ban fracking, or you're in a town that builds airplanes and all of a sudden you're being told, oh no, we're just going to do high speed rail. I mean, any of those kinds of things could have catastrophic effects on large parts of the yeomanry, the people who sell to the people who make planes, the people who work building planes. All these kinds of things are going to have severe effects. And I think that this division between these two parts of the middle class will be, I think, exacerbated no matter who wins.
When we come back with Joel Kotkin, I want to talk about the rule of law. Andy McCarthy, I thought, had an interesting observation in commenting on the Chuck Schumer flack from last week that I think folds into what you're describing in your piece. More with Joel Kotkin, who's Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University and author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, right after this.
The Dan Proft Show on the Salem Radio Network.
We're back with Joel Kotkin. He is an internationally recognized authority on global economic, political, and social trends, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. And Joel, picking up on our discussion about the bifurcated middle class, there was this incident last week with Chuck Schumer targeting Kavanaugh, Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch by name, and suggesting, you know, they'll have hell to pay. We know where you live if you go the wrong way on this Louisiana abortion law. And Andy McCarthy, writing in National Review, as to the question of should Chuck Schumer be censured for the comments that he made targeting those two justices and essentially, arguably, trying to intimidate them politically. McCarthy writes, in a rule of law society, that should rate censure. Case closed. Except it's not closed, because we're not a rule of law society. We just pretend to be. In rule of law society, a mob would not gather on the steps of the courthouse in the first place. And then he goes on to explain why the mob is there, because the Supreme Court took over arguably the legislative function with respect to Roe v. Wade. But without getting into Roe v. Wade, just for Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor, to argue that we are no longer in a rule of law society, that's the jarring statement to me. And I think that's what a lot of people feel on both sides, to some extent what you were describing before about the expansion of presidential power, and to a large extent what's happened over the last 3 years, too, where we seem to see different laws apply differently to different people based on political clout. And that, to me, seems to be as much of a danger and a delegitimizing factor as anything happening economically.
Well, I think that's definitely a case. And I think, again, it's the yeomanry, which is, you know, generally not well organized, doesn't really know how to, if you will, play the game, that is most vulnerable to that kind of policy. You know, law, in many ways, our system of law was really based in large part on, you know, coming out of England, of, you know, protecting property rights. You know, there are should be some limitations to that, but the basic idea is, if I own this little business or I own this piece of property, I have certain rights within that context. The scary thing, and a very old liberal friend of mine, and I don't consider myself a conservative at all, but an old liberal friend of mine, when I was in New York the other week, basically said that what scares him is not so much that it's authoritarian as it's totalitarian. That, in other words, we are moving towards a situation where people in the legal profession actually begin to endorse ideas of you know, that this is, that certain kinds of things are not permissible, that you can't say this and you can't say that. Look, anybody today who teaches or lectures or gets in front of an audience now lives in some sort of fear that if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to get, they're going to go after me and I'm going to lose my funding. So we're already seeing that not just, you know, property is not protected, but intellectual property is not protected. And I think the great fear that people have, I think, is that if you have, let's say in this year, you know, Joe Biden wins, he's going to be a pretty weak person himself, but he may be surrounded by people who want to accelerate this kind of, you know, thought control. This could really become a problem, because, you know, essentially, whether it's in literature or history or law, sort of a postmodernist mentality is now taken over, in which what we thought of as the rules of the game really no longer apply. It's the rules as the clerisy defines them,
and they're ever changing.
It's very scary,
and they're ever changing, right? So there's no stability or predictability about it.
Let's say on the green movement, 5 years ago, President Obama and many others said, well, natural gas is obviously the way to reduce emissions without, you know, overwhelmingly disrupting the economy and keeping prices, having prices be too high. Now it's not enough. Now you can't do natural gas. Now we have cities in California banning natural gas. I mean, so, you know, so what happens is it keeps going further and further. You know, you go from, women's rights to gay rights now to policies being devised for groups, transgender groups, who are a tiny percentage of the population, but loom as enormous percentages of the population in the media and in the arts. So it just has this tendency to continue to escalate, and it has now infected, and I think this would be the thing that I would focus on if I was making this argument, is in law schools, how people are taught about the law. They're not really taught about, well, there are legal principles and you need to enforce them. They're increasingly saying the legal system exists to create a what one might define as social justice. And that's the beginning of the end. That's exactly what happened in Russia. It's what happened in Nazi Germany. It's what happened under Mussolini. And unfortunately, we're headed in that direction. And, you know, do I necessarily trust those people who define what justice is if it's basically subjective and not something that is backed up by law or tradition?
He is Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, author of The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. Check out his piece we were discussing at Quillette.com, The Two Middle Classes, which I'll tweet out at Dan Prof Show. Joel Kotkin, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
This is the Dan Prof Show.